week to give a hakdama to the next piece of the Mesillas Yeshayahu. The next piece of the Mesillas Yeshayahu discusses the purpose of life. And I have a shiur which I've given here a few times in different occasions, most of them on Shabbosis. So he never had really a chance to go through it in a way that you could write it down or ask questions and discuss it. It was more of a drasha than a shiur. So I want to go over it, and it may take us 2 weeks. It is a good, comprehensive discussion of this Mesillas Yesharim, but in a much broadened way. And then we'll understand the Mesillas Yesharim a lot better after we hear this Hakdama, I think. In addition, I haven't yet decided what halachas we're learning. And I really don't know. Somebody gave a suggestion about going over Hilchas Yichud. I may do that, but that's going to take us a week or two, and that's it. So still need something more comprehensive to decide to start, and I still don't have a clear idea. What? Hanukkah will do as we get closer to Hanukkah. But we did that recently in the last few years. I don't have to think about it. Okay, let's not use the time to decide that. If somebody has ideas, tell me during the week. Okay. Some of you have heard this, again, this as a drasha, as a shiur over the years. And if you know it ahead of me, you can prompt me or whatever. But, okay, we'll start with what seems to be a contradiction in Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos. One Mishnah says that Yofa Shoachas Shel Koras Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayei Olam Hazeh. Okay, again, I'm doing this over for many of you in order that we can do it in a sheer environment, not a drasha environment, so you can ask questions and we can do it slowly and understand it properly. So if you have questions, stop me and we'll there's room for discussion, except for David. Hey, what? Yeah?
Isn't it?
Yeah?
Isn't it the same Mishnah?
What do you say? Same Mishnah.
Yeah,
same Mishnah.
Yeah, because there's another Mishnah. So.
Right. The Mishnah, the part of the Mishnah. Reish and the Sefer. Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Yofa Shoacha Shokoras Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayei Olam Hazeh. In fact, this is the second part of the Mishnah, but let's start with that. That 1 second of Koras Ruach. Michtam Elio explains, what is Koras Ruach? Koras Ruach is pleasure, peripheral pleasure. He describes that if you're invited, there's a banquet that they're making, and you're not invited. So you never will eat the food. You'll never even see the food. The closest you can come is to walk outside the banquet hall and get a whiff of the aroma of the food that's cooking. That's called Koras Ruach. Totally peripheral enjoyment. 1 second of that kind of enjoyment in Olam Haba is greater than Kol Chayei Olam Hazeh. What does that mean? Take all the pleasure that anyone ever had in their life from the beginning of time till the end of time, from Adam Arishon till the end of time. All the pleasure any individual ever had. Added all together is this one gigantic, intense pleasure. 1 second of peripheral pleasure in Olam Haba is greater than that. So that seems to trivialize this world completely. This world is like worth nothing compared to Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the Iker, and this is nothing. Yet, there's another Mishnah, which is, like Gavaron said, the other part of the first part of this Mishnah. Yofa Shoachas Shel Tshuva Maisin Tovim Bolam Hazeh Mikol Chayei Olam Haba. That 1 second of Tshuva and Maisin Tovim in this world is greater than the whole next world. So on the surface seems to be a contradiction. So if we were scholars, we would say that there are two schools of thought amongst the rabbis. There's the this-worldly school and the other-worldly school. The school that holds from this world and the school that holds from Olam Haba. The only problem is that the same time the Rabbi Yaakov said both Mishnayos and he was not schizophrenic. So he didn't argue with himself. So there must be some qualification as to when Olam Hazeh is better than Olam Haba and when Olam Haba is better than Olam Hazeh. They're both true, just have to be qualified. So we need to know what that qualification is. To bring this out, I always like to quote the following medrash, and we'll go into detail in this medrash. The medrash says the following. It's a medrash, if you want to look it up, in Koheles Rabbah, on the Pasuk, Mu'uvas lo yuchal liskom. There are certain things in this world that are crooked and never can be corrected. For that, the medrash gives the following example. There were two Rishoyim in this world who were partners in crime. They were murderers, robbers, despicable people. And one of them dropped dead, and he went to Gehenna. And he was suffering in Gehenna. It doesn't say there how long, but he was suffering in Gehenna for an extended amount of time. And one day he looks up, and he sees that they're escorting the neshama of his partner into Gan Eden. So he calls over the malach that's appointed over the neshamas in Gehenna, and he says, I think there's been a computer error, because that guy was my partner. When I murdered, he murdered. When I stole, he stole. So if I belong in Gehenna, so does he. And if he belongs in Gan Eden, so do I. So go and find out where the mistake was, and either get me out of here or bring him here to keep me company. One of the two. The angel comes back, and he says, there's been no mistake. He belongs there, you belong here. He says, oh, I get it. He must have bribed somebody. So just tell me who, how much, I'll double the amount, get me out of here. The angel says, sorry, but there is no bribery here. She says, then explain to me, why is my partner in Gan Eden and I'm in Gehenna? He said, because you don't know what happened after you died. You were such a despicable person that when you dropped dead one day in the street, nobody wanted to bury you. So they left your body to rot for 3 days in the street. People just walked over you or whatever, they just ignored you. 3 days after your body was in the street, she started to decompose, and somebody benevolently kicked your body into a hole in the side of the road. That's where you're buried. When your partner saw that, he started to rethink his whole life. And he said to himself, this is the way I want to end up. And from that, he went to deciding whether his whole life was the way he should be leading it. And he regretted what he was doing, and he did tshuva. And he died a totally repentant person, a complete Baal tshuva tzaddik. So your partner's in Gan Eden, and you're in Gehenna. And before I go on, since there are women here, I always have to add the following idea in parentheses for women. Men, it doesn't bother. But women, it bothers. The women, I'm sure somebody here is thinking, this is not fair. Because the first guy didn't have anybody to learn from, and the second guy had the first guy to learn from, and therefore it's not fair. Anybody thinking that?
I was.
Okay. There's some effeminate men also. They, in any case. That's another question. I don't know about that. In any case, maybe he did. That's why Gehenna was a little bit colder for him. The answer to both of those questions is, this medrash is not interested in telling us the life story of these two people. It's interested in putting over a message. Now, let me set your mind at ease that the first guy had somebody that he could have learned from, that he saw something in his lifetime that he could have used, and he didn't. The medrash doesn't tell us because it's not interested in telling us the life story of these two people. So just if you feel good, I'm adding that for sure there was something, and therefore it's fair. Okay. And the second guy could have ignored what happened to the first guy too, right? But he didn't. Okay. In any case. So the guy says, oh, great. I thought it was going to cost me money. Tshuva? I'll do tshuva. Right? Really? I regret doing everything I did. If I would have known where I'm going to end up, I never would have done it. I regret it. Chatosi, ovisi, poshati. I'll never do it again. Get me out of here. The malach says, I'm sorry, but it's a little late. Don't you know the world you came from is like Erev Shabbos? And the world you're in now is like Shabbos. If you prepare on Erev Shabbos, you have what to eat on Shabbos. You didn't prepare Erev Shabbos. You didn't do tshuva in the world you came from. Now it's Shabbos. Now it's Olam Haba. You can't do tshuva now. Now it's too late. Right? Somebody prepares Erev Shabbos, has what to eat on Shabbos. If you wake up Friday night and you forgot to prepare anything on Friday, then you can open a can of tuna fish maybe, but you can't have a meal finished. And don't you know, the Malach said, the world you came from is like the dry land. And the world you're in now is like the sea. If you prepare your supplies on your boat before you set sail, you have what to eat in the middle of the ocean. If you don't supply your boat before you set sail with an empty boat, and now you're in the middle of the ocean, you want to eat, there's no supermarkets, you can't supply your boat in the middle of the ocean. You set sail with an empty boat. Now's not the time to do tshuva. And don't you know, the angel said, that the world you came from is like the city, the yishuv. And the world you're in now is like the midbar, like the desert. person prepares himself in the city, he can survive the desert. You went into the desert without a survival kit, you can't get it in the desert. So that's it, it's too late. You can't do tshuva here. It's like Shabbos, it's like the sea, it's like the Midbar. There's no place to do it. You had to do it before you came here. The guy realizes, Uvas lo yuchal liskon, there's nothing he can do to correct the situation, and he bemoans his fate. That's the Medrash. Two things bother me about this Medrash. First thing, there's another mishnah in Pirkei Avos, also by Rabbi Yaakov, right next to these mishnayos. Ha'olam hazeh dome leprozdor b'fnei ha'olam haba, haskein atzmecha beprozdor kedei shetikonis letrakli. This world is like a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room so you can get into the castle. Why did the Malach tell him three mishalim, Erev Shabbos, Shabbos, Yam and Yabasha, Yishuv and Midbar, and not tell him a mission in Pirkei Avos? The mission is much more authoritative. Tell him, don't you know the world you came from was like a preparation room, this is the castle. You didn't prepare yourself in the preparation room, can't get into the castle. Why do you have to tell him three other mishalim and not the one in Pirkei Avos? And the second question is, I'm sure the guy got the message after the first mashal. Basically, it's the same thing said in three different ways. Why was it necessary to give him three mishalim? Tell him the first mashal. Right, Erev Shabbos and Shabbos. Okay, tough luck. So now Shabbos, you didn't prepare yourself. Erev Shabbos, too late. Why do you have to give him three mishalim? So many, many years ago when I said this over in Ashir, Meir Migdal said, Rabbi, I'll tell you why I give him three mishalim. That's Gehenna. Listening to long drushes that are not necessary. That's nice for Meir Migdal to say, but from my standpoint, I don't agree with that. So, in any case, so we'll have to have another answer. So there's two questions. Why not quote Pirkei Avos, and why dafka three mishalim? Okay, to understand this, you have to understand that there are basically two philosophies of life. And they have, at least the first one, has many manifestations, but bottom line, it boils down to the same thing. And that's something that I saw condensed on a t-shirt that they were selling in New York many, many years ago. I remember I was in a house where I was staying, and Chaim Ben Moshe was there. We were there for recruiting for the Moshav. And on the television was if anybody doesn't know what that is, I'll explain to you afterwards. On a television, they had, I think it was the Good Morning Show or something, and they were showing t-shirts that they were selling in New York like hotcakes. What did it say on the t-shirt? People were buying them up. Had one sentence on it. The one who has the most toys when he dies wins. That's what it said on the t-shirt. What does it mean? That basically the purpose of life is to amass toys. You're born, you have a certain amount of years in this world to amass toys. Toys when you're little are little. When you get bigger, the toys get bigger. Toys are anything that gives you pleasure. Experiences, things. Your purpose in life is to amass pleasure. And the one who has the most things, the most experiences of pleasure during his lifetime wins. He had a successful life. I was looking for an asterisk on the t-shirt with a footnote. Exactly what do you win at that point since you're dead? And there was no asterisk. Then I heard about a woman in Los Angeles who asked to be buried not in a casket but in her Rolls Royce. She had the biggest, most expensive toy. She won. And she got to be buried in her toy. So obviously she got a tremendous benefit, which I'm not sure what it was, even though her gas mileage probably at that point was great, but since she wasn't going anywhere. But beyond that, I'm not sure exactly what the big schus was to be buried in a Rolls Royce, but that's what she got. If that is one philosophy of life. Life is enjoy yourself. Now, that can sound very crass, and people could be thinking, that's not true. There are very respectable people in this world who, live a life for much grander reasons than just enjoying themselves. But don't bring to mind somebody munching on a turkey leg or whatever, or, gambling, or doing any other kinds of crass kinds of pleasure. Doesn't only mean that. There are people who enjoy good literature, opera. But the reason they do it is because they enjoy it. That is the purpose. The purpose is to enjoy yourself. And they do it to enjoy themselves. There are people who enjoy helping other people. And they volunteer to go to the Peace Corps. Does that still exist? and help people in, you know, in other countries or whatever, and live under terrible situations. But if you ask them why they're doing it, it's because this is what I enjoy. And this is the way that I think that I will lead a life that brings me fulfillment and brings me enjoyment. So some people's enjoyment is very crass and some people's very respectable. But it all boils down to the same bottom line. You are put in this world, enjoy your life, do something that you feel is fulfilling, and then exit stage left. That's what life is all about. Now, if that's all that life is all about, it's the number of seconds between when you're born and when you die, and filling it with things that are enjoyable and fulfilling, then you can describe life in the following very depressing way. And I didn't come here to depress you. This is not our hashkafa of life. We're going to get to that, and that's exactly what the Mesil Shasharim is going to speak about. I'm just going to give you a more overview, a spectacular view of it than the words of the Mesil Shasharim. But if you, that is your philosophy of life, life is the number of seconds between the time you're born and the time you die, and how much pleasure and fulfillment you can have between those two times, then you can describe life in the following depressing way. Imagine a man standing outside the delivery room, waiting for news of his wife's impending birth. The doctor or midwife comes out and says, I had terrible news for you. You have a child that was born. Your child was born with a terminal disease which it can't survive. Your child is going to die from the disease it was born with. The man says to the doctor, give me some hope. There's a cure. Nope, there's no cure. You're looking for a cure. Now we don't know. Somebody survived this terrible disease miraculously without a cure. Never. Not in the annals of medical history. There's no cure, not looking for a cure, and nobody's ever survived it. So the father says, I've never heard of such a terrible disease. What's the name of this terrible disease that my child was born with? The doctor says, you see, when your child was born, he contracted the disease called life. And we don't know how long it's going to take. Some people have survived 80, 90, 120 years. But one thing's for sure, whoever has been born with a disease called life eventually succumbed to it. Then she died from it. So life is a long disease. I mean, think about it. Right? If you would now know the number of seconds you're going to live, let's say we're all going to live 120 years in Mitzvah Hashem. So let's figure out how many seconds in 120 years. Take 120 and multiply it by 365. That's how many days in 120 years. Multiply that by 24, you have how many hours. Multiply that by 60, you have how many minutes. Multiply that by 60, you have how many seconds. Big number. Okay, someday I'm going to do this on a calculator and figure out the number. It's a big number. Take that number and put it on a digital display in the delivery room. And the moment you're born, push the button, and what happens? The numbers start going backwards towards zero. While you're sitting here, the numbers are going backwards. Right? One after the other. You're getting closer and closer to zero. We all are. If that's all that life is, then life is a long death. You're born and you begin to die. And that's exactly what Chazal say, Rishoyim b'chayehem nikroyim meisim. Now the normal way of understanding that everybody says, is Rishoyim in their lifetime are called dead. And that's probably true. But I think you can say it, same words, a different way. And it means what I'm telling you. Rishoyim b'chayehem. Rishoyim while they're living. Meisim. Nikroyim meisim is a verb. They are called dying. That's basically what they're doing. They are starting off at a starting point called birth. They are now slowly getting towards the end point called death. It's a long death. They are dying. And that's exactly what Esav said about his life, how he described his life. Hinei onochi holeich lamus. Now what? He was 15 years old at the time. What 15-year-old talks about dying? Especially when they were living to be 200 at the time. So he's a 15-year-old and he's talking about, oh, I'm on my way to die. Simple pshat is that that is the description of a life of a rosh. Basically, I was born and I'm on my way to die. And the Rabbeinu Yonah says that's the way all life is. We say it in the seal. On the rotzim, the heim rotzim. On the rotzim, the chayilum haba, the heim rotzim, the bar shachas. Says the Rabbeinu Yonah, doesn't anybody walk in this world? Why is everybody running? He says they're running towards the Beis HaKvaros, that's all. Time is running fast for every person. And that's exactly what life is. It's just a countdown of time from the time you're born to the time you die, and it runs. And somehow, as you get older, it goes faster. Right? That surely is what's it called, shows that time is relative. Right? The same time zones that I can remember when I was a kid that went like between Rosh Hashanah and Pesach was like the time of school, the main school time, without real vacations. It took forever. And now between Rosh Hashanah and Pesach goes like yesterday, a few seconds. I think anybody that's, you know, a little bit older can vouch for that, and the youngsters will say the other way. So it's unbelievable how time then goes faster and faster and faster. So that's the metzius of that kind of life. That's not our philosophy of life. And this is what we're going to learn in the Mesillas Yesharim in a little bit different way, and I want to spend time on it because there are some basic questions that have to be answered, which I'd rather answer in the Haggadah than as we say it in the Mesillas Yesharim. So what is our philosophy of life? If that's what life is all about, it's pretty dismal. And the truth is, that's why there's a lot of depressed people in this world. Right? Because as you get towards midlife, and you begin to think that you're getting towards, you know, the hourglass is, the sand is going out, and you're getting closer and closer, you're over the hill, it becomes very depressing. Because everything you did, like Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelis, what did you gain? And everything's just going downhill now. So people are depressed. Therefore, they go to psychiatrists who are equally depressed. That's a very depressed world. Right? That's a metzius. So what is our philosophy of life? What is our philosophy of life, right, that makes it different? It's not all of that. That's the way life is, but it's not. We believe that life did not start when you're born. That's the first Hanukkah. Life started for all of us equally, when we were created as neshamas. As neshamas, we are all equally old, as old as each other. Right? We all were created the first or second day of creation, and our neshamas existed tachas kisei hakavod, whatever that means. It doesn't mean we were under some chair. What's it called? Whatever it means, I don't know. I can't describe to you what that means. But that's where we were, tachas kisei hakavod. When we'll go back there, we'll be al kisei hakavod. What you do in this world gets you from under the chair to over the chair. Okay, whatever that means. That's why in the Kel Moli Rachamim it says you should say al kisei hakavod and not tachas kisei hakavod. When a person dies, he goes, the neshamas of Jews go al kisei hakavod, not tachas al kanfei hashvina, right? Al kanfei hashvina, not tachas kanfei hashvina. In any case, so we all were created as neshamas, and that in itself is something that is significant. We are not bodies. You look in the mirror and you say, that's me, right? What you see, your face, your body, that's me. And I have a neshama, like a little Casper the Friendly Ghost flitting around inside me called my neshama. That is not the way it is. We are neshamas. We are dressed in a body. That's all. Our body is a suit of clothing that our neshama wears in this physical world. I always like to compare it to an astronaut. An astronaut, as long as he's on terra firma, he's on this earth, he can function very nicely without a suit, without a spacesuit. He can breathe, he can walk, he can talk, everything. When he goes into outer space, so the environment of outer space needs a pressurized suit because there's no air pressure. He needs oxygen to breathe because there's no atmosphere. And he needs a radio to talk because there's no sound waves. There's no air, no air waves. So it can't be any sound waves. So he needs a radio to talk. When he comes back to Earth, he takes off the suit. Same thing. As long as we were in a spiritual world, as neshamos, which we are, right? And don't ask me, it says, alokai neshama shenosato bi, because we speak about it as we see it. But that's, the metzius is, we are neshamos. And the B is, we are the neshama. And as long as we were in a spiritual world, we could hear and see without ears and eyes, get around without legs, everything perfectly. But when we came into this physical world, which we will discuss why that was necessary, we needed a physical body to be able to function. In this world, the neshama can't see without eyes. It can't hear without ears. So it has to put on a spacesuit. That's our bodies. Our bodies are just a spacesuit. When we leave this world, we leave the spacesuit here, just like the astronaut takes off the spacesuit. Could be for that reason. One of the ways that we express mourning for somebody who dies by tearing our clothing, to show that it's only the clothing that's been torn away, but the essence of the person still exists. It's only the clothing that's been torn. In any case, so that also gives a different perspective on handicapped people, retarded people. If you have an astronaut in space and his radio breaks, can't talk now. There's no way that he can talk except maybe with sign language, because there's no way that the sound waves will be made in outer space. So his radio's broken, he is now a mute. Would anybody think of tearing out his larynx, his voice box? Right, of course not. His voice box is perfectly okay. If he'll be back on Earth, he'll be able to talk. Just in the environment he's in now, he can't express himself because he doesn't have a radio. But it's an artificial, external thing. People who are handicapped, mentally, physically, whatever, it's just a spacesuit that's been affected. But their neshama pretty much is intact. So you can't relate a person's body with the essence of who he is and what he is. And today they have all these autistic children and adults that are giving over messages, you know, from their neshamas, right, bypassing their body. And obviously underneath there's very intelligent people. If you believe, again, I'm not advocating that these things are true or that there's a source for them or that you should even take them into consideration. Right? One of my sons-in-law once got a message. He was involved in this kind of thing with one of these, I forgot what they're called, for autistic, a sister, I don't remember what it's called. Anybody knows what the person who helps the autistic
shadow.
Person. What?
Mentor.
Hey?
Shadow?
Shadow, no. It's
mentor.
A who?
Mentor.
Mentor, maybe. There's another word for it, though. Facilitator, that's it. Facilitator. And so what did this autistic child tell my son-in-law? That he should learn Torah and spend more time working on his midos or whatever. So I told him, it's very nice. I've been telling him the same thing. I'm not autistic. Why would you listen to a 12-year-old autistic person over... Torah tells you that too. Right? Why is that more caution to you than hearing it from whatever? And besides the fact that you don't know where these messages are coming from. Right? They may be coming from the autistic person. They may be coming from Shadim, Malachim. There's all kinds of spiritual forces out there. And today they'll tell you to learn Torah. And tomorrow they'll tell you to go and convert to Christianity or something else. There's all kind of autistic people saying those kind of things too. So if you take it as truth, right, then you know Mashiach's coming, you better do tshuva. It's very good. Mashiach's coming, you better do tshuva. Not because some autistic person told you to do it, because the Rav Amram told you to do it. So to accept these things as more than entertaining, if you want to use it as a chizuk, is very nice, but more than that, you should not take these things as some kind of guide to your life or whatever. That is not the way that people guide their lives, by these kinds of things. They're entertaining, they're nice, they're just like Torah codes or any of these other things. They're to give you a chizuk, but you shouldn't put anything and run your life according to them. In any case, that was just an aside. So, but the person's body, mind, may be handicapped, but it's only the spacesuit. Deep down underneath all of that is a fine neshama. So they said the Chazon Ish used to stand up for retarded people. Because somebody who doesn't need Torah and mitzvahs in this world to perfect himself obviously has a big neshama. So deep down underneath that retarded person is a big neshama. So that's a way of looking at ourselves. In any case, we were created as neshamas and we existed for thousands of years. We don't remember it. If we would remember it, we would have no free choice. So we don't remember it. And we're born into this world. And we come into this world for a very short time of 120 years. In a physical world, in a physical body. And eventually we go back to that spiritual world. And that is our conception of life. Life doesn't begin when you're born, doesn't end when you die. So now if we all started out as neshamas, and we're going to end up as neshamas, then what is the purpose of putting us in this physical world? Why do we come here? Why don't we just stay where we were? Why did God bother to bring us into a physical world, put us in a body, right, give us Torah and Mitzvah, just leave us where we were? So on that, and that is basically what the Mesillas Yesharim is going to focus on, is the purpose of life in this world. And what Mesillas Yesharim will say here, a little bit differently in Derech Hashem, and we will go into the differences when we get there, but at this point I want to point out something that's extremely important. You've all heard this before, not from me, from who knows what, obvious, well-known thing. There's also a very obvious, well-known question that you have to deal with. When we get to the Mesillas Yesharim, we'll deal with it in two ways. At this point, we'll deal with one way. Basically, what Chazal say, the Derech Hashem, same authors of Mesillas Yesharim, and the Mesillas Yesharim a little bit differently, he says that God, being the ultimate good, wanted to, with total chesed, total kindness and giving, unconditional, wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that could receive that goodness, and that's the nature of good, to do good. So God, by his very nature, wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that could receive it. And he wanted that goodness to be the ultimate goodness. The ultimate goodness is God himself. So God wanted basically to shower himself on a creation that could have a relationship with him. That is called Olam Haba. That is what Olam Haba is. A close, intimate relationship with God. Tzadikim Yoshvim, Vatroseim Berasheim, V'nehenem Yziv Hashchina. That relation, and that's God's will. That's what he wants for us. So, God could have created neshamas, attached himself to them, or attached them to him, and that was it. Why do you have to create this world? All you have to do is create neshamas in Olam Haba. Why this world? And that, Chazal tell us, that would have been Nahama de Chesufa, bread that a person would be embarrassed to eat. Meaning, something you get for free that you don't earn and don't deserve, you are embarrassed. You don't really appreciate it as much as you would appreciate it if you earned it. Therefore, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would just shower us with his presence, right, for free, total chesed, it wouldn't be a total chesed because we wouldn't appreciate it. Therefore, the Rabban Shalom put us in this world so we can earn that chesed and appreciate it. But before we go on, there's an obvious question here. God could have saved a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of bother and not created this world at all, just created neshamas that can appreciate what they don't earn. Who made up that rule? Where did that rule come from that people don't appreciate what they don't earn? God can make a world any way he wants. Why couldn't he make a world with neshamas that appreciate what they don't earn? And then the reward or the showering of his goodness would be complete. And he wouldn't have to create this world at all. Why did the Rabban Shalom choose to create this world, leave the rule the way that it was, and necessitate a world where we'd earn that goodness when he could have just changed one little rule and made neshamas that appreciate what they don't earn? In the Mesillas Yesharim, he doesn't deal with that at all. The question is an unasked question, and it's a good question. In Derech Hashem, I think he does deal with it a little bit, but we'll wait till we get to the Mesillas Yesharim just with the other. But the first answer is the more fundamental answer, and that is there is no answer to that question. But it's not a cop-out. I'm not just avoiding the question. There's a reason why there isn't an answer to that question. And let me explain to you why. And it's a yesod in many kinds of things. It applies here, it applies many places. This question, you're not allowed to ask. Not because it's usher, but it's impossible to answer. Why? Our minds are limited to whatever we have a point of reference to. We can't even imagine things that we have no point of reference to. I'll give you two examples. Close your eyes and picture in your mind's eye nothing. Nothingness. Okay? You have now nothingness in your mind's eye. Take your arm and stick it into that nothingness. Okay, your arm now is in the nothingness. Okay. That's not nothing. That's space. Now try again. Picture nothingness meaning no space. Don't even try. You get a headache. Can't even imagine. Why not? Because we have no point of reference to no space. We live in a world where there is space. We don't have any reference to no space. You can't even imagine it. Another example. Imagine something that you never saw and never heard of. Impossible. What can you imagine? A monster with 10 heads, 4 arms, 6 legs, but you saw or heard of all these things. You just made a combination of a lot of them. But something that you never saw and never heard of, you can't imagine. You have no point of reference to it. All you can imagine is something you saw or heard of and then change it or whatever. But you can't think of something that's totally not made up of anything you ever saw or heard of. It's impossible. It's a contradictory of terms itself. So what are you going to tell me? But we have a connection with God. We haven't seen or heard him, right? So we have to imagine God. We don't need point of reference. That's 100% the same thing. We only have a relationship with God from creation and on. That's why the name of God, the greatest name which we don't say, is Yud Kei Vav Kei. That means Mahaveh, the one who created. But it's not God before creation. There is no name for God outside of creation. We call him Ein Sof. That's not a name. That is a cop-out. That is avoiding a name. It's just a description of something I don't understand what it is, and that's what it is, Ein Sof. The names of the Ribbono Shel Olam are only within the Bria. Our only relationship to God is within creation, not before creation. That's why the Gemara says, and Mishnah says in Chagiga, you're not allowed to ask what's above the world, beneath the world, before the world. That's why the Beis and Bereishis is closed on 3 sides. It's only open in front. From Bereishis on, you can ask questions. Before, beyond, on either side, you can't ask any questions. Not because it's awesome, because we have no frame of reference. So it's impossible for our minds to comprehend it. So you can't ask a question, why couldn't have God created the world differently? Because then we're asking a question on before creation, why God couldn't have created it differently. That's something that applies to God's mind. It's beyond our comprehension. There can't be an answer for us. What can we understand? Then what's the Mishnah Sefer describing? He's not describing why did God create the world the way he did. Then what is he describing? What he's going to be describing is, once God created the world the way he did, what can we understand about it? That's a different question. It's not possible to ask why he couldn't do it differently. But once he did it the way that we have a reference to, what can we understand about it? We can question what it is after the fact, but not why that's a fact. Not why God decided to do it this way. Why he couldn't do it differently. When we learn it, we'll see maybe there's another answer. But this is the real fundamental answer. There is no answer to that question. There can't be an answer because we are questioning God's mind and we have no point of reference to God's mind before creation. Okay, in any case. So, once God created a world where neshamas do need to appreciate what they have to earn what they have in order to appreciate it. So now, the Chacham said the following. Since if God would have just created neshamas, showered them with his presence, put them in Olam Haba, it wouldn't be the total good, because it wouldn't be appreciated 100%. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam put the neshamas in a physical world, distanced from him. And he said, you create the relationship with me instead of me creating it with you. And then you'll appreciate it. And he gave us the ability to connect ourselves to him. How so? Not just with Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs are just the tip of the iceberg. They are the springboard. But bechol drochecha do'eru. Person in this world can do things. And using the Torah and mitzvahs as a guide, that no matter what you do, you can do'eyu, you can connect yourself to God. Das means a chibur. Vayeda adam eschava ishto. There's a connection, attachment. You can attach yourself to God by doing things that are godly. What's godly? That's what the Torah tells us. What's godly, what's not godly. So, that is l'kol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim. How you eat, how you drink, how you conduct your married life, your political life, your economic life. Everything can be done in a way that's more godlike or less godlike. The more things you do godlike, the more you make your neshama like God, and a more like God neshama will have a greater relationship to Him in the future when you leave this world. A less godlike neshama will have less of a relationship. The more you make yourself like God, the more you can attach to Him. And there's an infinite amount of gradations in how close you can get to the Rabban Shem, since the Rabban Shem is infinite. And it's not that we earn Olam Haba. Most people think it's like a Purim carnival. They have these games, and you play the games, and if you win, you get a coupon. At the end of the day, you cash in your coupons for a prize. You have a lot of coupons, you get a big bear. A little amount of coupons, you get a little bear. Same thing, that's how Olam Haba is. There's games, they're called mitzvahs. Unfortunately, it's not only that you don't get a coupon, you can mess up the game and get, right, punished too. So there's demerits and merits. You play the games. If you play them good, you get coupons. You don't play them good, you get demerits. After 120 years, you go to Shamayim, they punch your name into this master computer, they add up all your coupons, they give you a petek, go cash it in for your share in the world to come. Doesn't work like that. Can't. Because that would not be the ultimate pleasure. Wouldn't be the ultimate goodness. How so? Imagine if somebody gave you one of these plush reclining chairs to sit in, free. Right? You wanted it, and somebody gave it to you as a present. You sat in it, you'd appreciate it. You'd have pleasure in it. But what if you really wanted that chair, and nobody gave it to you as a present? And you had to work 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, for a month, to earn enough money to buy that chair. And at the end of the month, you went out and after all your work, you had the money, and you went and bought your chair. And now you brought it home and you sat in it. Do you think you would appreciate it more if you bought it than if you got it as a present? Of course. Right? You put all that work into it. You appreciate it. What about the following scenario? You planted trees, nurtured them for years, until they grew enough to cut down and make lumber. You took the lumber and you made it into the frame of the chair. You raised sheep, sheared their wool, made the stuffing for the chair. Raised cotton, spun it into thread, made it into material for the upholstery of the chair. Harvested dyes, made the dyes to color the chair. You mined nails, mined iron, made them into nails to put the chair together. Now you sat in the chair. Do you think you'd appreciate it even more if you bought it? Of course. You made it. Every single thing there is your doing. You'd of course appreciate the chair more than if you bought it. So what do you see from there? What you get unearned is not as appreciated as much as what you earn. And what you create is more appreciated than what you earn. So Olam Haba, to be fully appreciated, has to not be earned. It has to be created. We create Olam Haba by making our neshamas more godlike through Torah mitzvahs, acting in a way that's more godly. We create Olam Haba, and we get it when we leave this world. But we create it, right? So God put us in a world where He's hiding, basically, and He expects us to find Him, to uncover Him, to attach ourselves to Him. That's how we create Olam Haba. Create. There's a famous maaser with the Magid Minezrich. Once left his house, and he saw a little girl, 6-year-old girl, crying. So he went over to her. He said, "Can I help you? Is there a problem?" She said, "Yeah, we've been playing hide and go seek, and I've been hiding for the last half hour. Nobody's looking for me." He said, "Don't cry, little girl. God has the same problem. He hid himself in this world. He expects people to find him and attach themselves to him, and he's been hiding for quite a while, and there's a lot of people not looking for him." So that's what this world is all about. It's a place to create Olam Haba. Not earn it, create it. And in that respect, it says that there was a famous Abarian, a sinner, called Eliezer ben Durdoy. And he was an immoral person, and something happened in the midst of a sin that shocked him into doing tshuva. And it was such an intense tshuva, it changed his whole life, that he died from the intensity, from the trauma. And a bas call went out, Ashrecha Rebbe Elazar ben Dudoy Shemezuman Lolam Haba, that he, with that 1 second of intense tshuva, he changed his entire life, and he created his Olam Haba. So it says that Rabbi Yudah Nasi, when he heard about it, cried. And he said, Yeshkona Olama B'Shoachas. It's possible for a person to acquire his Olam Haba in 1 second. So it tells Rashi Shiva asks, why did Rabbi Yudah Nasi cry? Should have been ecstatic. Wow, you can create your Olam Haba in 1 second. What was he crying about? So he realized you could do that every second. There's no limit to how much Olam Haba a person can have, because Olam Haba means a closer, more intimate relationship with God. And there is an unlimited, infinite amount that you can get. Just think, if you want a tzir, mathematics, there is an infinite amount of whole numbers. But there's also an infinite amount of fractions between every whole number. So there's an infinite amount of infinities when it comes to mathematics. Then it can be an infinite amount of eternities when it comes to Olam Haba. There's no limit. You could keep getting more and more and more and more, closer and closer. And if that's the case, every second you can do that. You can create Olam Haba every second. And how many people let seconds just slip through their fingers and don't create anything? Something to cry about. That's what Buna Nasir was crying about. Okay, next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we will continue this and compare these two philosophies and see if life in this world is important or not based on these two philosophies.